Ladies and gentlemen, it's College Football Thursday. Let's go, baby. We're back. It's week one. College football is tonight. And when I say tonight, I mean, I think the first game's at 4:30 Central. Unbelievable. Boise State, South Florida, that's going to wind up being smash mouth. Air it out. Late touchdown wins that game. I'm excited to talk about all the games. We don't have that much time. That would take us about 5 hours. I've got college football expert Zach Barnett, John Bryce, Doug Samuels. Gentlemen, it's great to see you. I'm going to start us right off. Here's what I want to do today. I want to talk about what games excite you on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all of which are college football. God bless America. And then we talk about any other overriding themes, that kind of thing. Thursday, I'm going to start us with Boise, South Florida. I think this is back and forth, late touchdown wins the game. I kind of think South Florida might sneak up and get them, but we'll see. The floor is open. Who wants to go next? Who's excited about one game Thursday night? Zach, I see you.
I'm really looking forward to the nightcap on ESPN Nebraska at Cincinnati, which is, of course, a Cincinnati home game in Kansas City, Missouri, which makes all the sense of the world. Why wouldn't Cincinnati play a home game in Kansas City, Missouri? It's my opinion that Matt Rhule has been treated with kid gloves by the Nebraska media through his first two seasons somewhat fairly. That program struggles have been well documented. Those kid gloves would be removed and replaced by brass knuckles if he loses this game. Nebraska doesn't need to go undefeated or anything close to that this season, but you can't be losing to Cincinnati in year three if you're Matt Rhule at Nebraska. So this there's a quite a bit of must-win games for coaches this weekend. I could be convinced that there's no more must-win for any coach this weekend than Matt Rhule tonight against Cincinnati.
I would agree with that. What do we think Nebraska fans expect win total wise from this Nebraska team? Is it 8 or 9 wins? Is that 8.5 expected?
I think if you're talking about Nebraska fans, I would bet that their basement is 8 wins, and that they're believing they can get to 10 wins and be a team in playoff consideration if Raiola takes the next step and Rhule does what he typically has done in year three at programs. So yeah, I think that's a basement expectation. And as we discussed on this pod a couple of weeks ago, this better be the start of Nebraska getting to 6-0, 7-1, or it's not going to be that type of season whatsoever for the Huskers.
In our teams we think are going to overachieve or underachieve, I think Nebraska is going to underachieve. The number in Vegas is 7.5 wins. I think they go under 7.5, even with winning this game. Zach, to your point, if they were to lose this game, whoo, buddy, like it's almost like the season's just ending.
I just did some quick math. Matt Rhule's 3-10 in one score game so far at Nebraska. That's somewhat of a misleading stat because it counts against you if you're 10-point dog and you lose by 3, somehow that turns into a negative. So that doesn't tell the whole story. But if they're following the traditional path of lose big, lose close, win big, they need to flip that number. Like Nebraska's going to play in a lot of close games this season, but with a second-year quarterback, you no longer have a true freshman quarterback. This is most, if not all, your roster. Like you need to go, instead of going 2-5 in one score games, you need to go 5-2.
And Cincinnati is a brand program to an extent, and it's a Big 12 foe, so you get a certain tick on the schedule box there. But the fact is, Scott Satterfield was the epitome of middle of the road at Louisville at like 25-24, and he did just enough to parachute over to Cincinnati, where he went from 3-9 to 5-7, and they're disaffected with that program. Bearcats have spent a ton of money on a new facility that's as nice as anywhere in college football, but it's not a great situation at Cincinnati, whereas Matt Rhule has talked openly about the incredible alignment and all they have going for them at Nebraska. So it's two programs, I think, very much viewed from the outside on different trajectories. And so if Nebraska can't capitalize on that, again, it's just further condemnation of the situation.
Amen. We're starting off you know, Boise State, South Florida, we're finishing with Nebraska, Cincy. There's a couple of good games in between. Anything else anybody's got their eye on? I got one.
We could go all day, but I would say in the interest of time, let's go to Friday.
Oh, wait, I got one more. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
I had an actual thought, and then it escaped me, and that's why there was an ugly pause. East Carolina, NC State, these two teams do not like each other whatsoever. They're meeting for the second consecutive time after East Carolina punctuated last season with a win against the Pack in the bowl game, and then that was the game that had the really ugly fight. And it was just a heinous scene, but Blake Carroll stepped in last year and won his first four games as the interim. That made him the permanent after East Carolina had done a search and talked to Ty Helton and a bunch of other people. And then Blake Carroll's 5-1 going into this season. I think this is a real juncture point season for Dave Doran and NC State. And if I believe that, then that means tonight has to be high stakes.
I hope that Wisconsin is improved this season. I'm concerned that they're not going to be. And Miami of Ohio is a good quality football team. I think that's like a 17 or 21 point spread. I'd take the points big. And I think Miami of Ohio might give them way more than they want. All right, jumping forward to Friday, I mentioned Tarleton State just Donkey Konged Portland State. They're going to Army. Keep an eye on that one. Obviously, I guess Auburn Baylor's the big one of that night. Any thoughts on that one? Obviously,
I mean it's two head coaches relatively on the hot seat. Hugh Freeze, no question, and then you know you could say the same on for Dave Aranda and Baylor as well. But that's the one a lot of people are going to have eyes on. I've been captivated by Georgia Tech and Colorado. The Deion Sanders health battle he's had over the past 8 months or however it's been. And he's still managing to pour everything into those buffs and get them ready to go. And then on the flip side, Brent Key has had a couple gems over the past 2 weeks, threatening to take one call or two calls on offense and defense into that game if they didn't get things sorted out. And then talking about cross training his offensive line, how hard is it to play on both sides of the center? So. That's kind of an underrated game. And then even later, the UNLV and Sam Houston State game, you know, Dan Mullen against Phil Longo. And that one's not going to be as sexy or as exciting, but two really good offensive minds going at each other after disappointing week ones. Hungry to get in the win column.
Yeah, great point on Dave Aranda, Doug. I really like that because, let's be candid again. Like midway through last season, early October, it didn't look good for Dave Aranda to continue as Baylor's head coach, and they righted the ship and ended up as an 8-win team. I think one of those significant wins that sort of sparked them was maybe against Texas Tech. But again, you're right. It's not been the upward ascent that they expected when they hired Aranda. He has retaken control of calling the defense, so that's significant that you're going to have Dave Aranda calling a defense against like seven different guys calling offense for Auburn. So you can't underestimate that subplot. And that's only if, you know, something happens and there's another Big 12 crew that messes up and gives a fifth down. I don't know what Auburn's contingency plan is for that since someone different calls every down. The Georgia Tech-Colorado game, to me, outside of maybe some of these really incredible top 10 matchups, I think is maybe the most compelling matchup of the weekend. And, Colorado did great things last year in a lot of games under Deion Sanders. I still would contend they hardly ever out-physicaled anyone. And we saw BYU absolutely punk them in the bowl game. And to me, Georgia Tech plays a very similar style of physically punishing football, as does BYU. And talking with somebody yesterday, a college offensive coordinator, his expectation is that Georgia Tech will go out there and big boy them. And so I'm very – very interested to see if Colorado can meet the physical challenge of Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech was as physical as just about anybody in football last year. I mean, they took it to Georgia in a game that went like 8 overtimes or whatever that should have never gone overtime because Georgia Tech had them beaten. And plus, Georgia Tech returns Haynes King, and Colorado is going to start Caden Salter, who couldn't last at Tennessee, did some nice things at Liberty, but Liberty fizzled last year. So, I'm really, really excited for that game Friday night.
JB. To JB's point about Auburn, they've been in the news quite a bit this month for not so great reasons. If they go and win this game, all this stuff melts away, at least for 6 days. If they lose, then Hugh finds himself in a pressure cooker, and you've got some difficult games in September, early October waiting for you, and you could easily find yourself 2-4 at the midway point if you can't beat Baylor. Baylor, I think depth in the secondary for Baylor is not great already, and then they've got some key injuries back there. So Jackson Arnold, they've invested heavily into his wide receiver core. He should be able to throw all over Baylor, but I don't know what to expect of him. He basically got fired as Oklahoma's quarterback. So I'm going to be watching that with interest. Watching the over-under for Sam Houston, UNLV, as we saw last Saturday, neither team has great defense, and that number's at 60. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these teams got to 50 on their own.
And then I kind of agree with you, Zach. Like, I can see UNLV absolutely running up to 45 in a hurry. Last one for me on Friday night would be Central Michigan at San Jose State. Low-key, underrated game, because what Ken Niumatalolo did last season at San Jose was just phenomenal. And now you've got the debut of the Matt Drinkel era at Central Michigan. I think all four of us on this pod would consider Drink a very good friend. I spent some time up there on that campus this spring for a story for us. And he's intent on bringing a very smash mouth. He told me, we're going to dress like the 1980s Redskins, and we're going to play a lot like the 1980s Redskins. So let's see how that goes.
We're going to need some permission for a midday nap to make it to that 10:30 kickoff during Friday from the boss man here. So, or just go Ed Ogeron and Dana Holgorsen on some Red Bulls.
10:30 Eastern kickoff for Central Michigan is rough, especially when you got to come back Saturday morning and we got Texas at Ohio State. First kick of the day. Let's go, baby. All right, give me some quick thoughts on that one. How's that one going to play out?
How about Ohio State deploying terrible towels for the first time in stadium history? They're giving out 100,000 red towels. And if you guys have seen them, then don't spoil it. But if you haven't seen them, just guess what one word is on the red towel.
The?
Bingo. Good job, Zach.
That's awesome.
That's it. So, I think that one, it's Texas's ability to affect Julian Sain early, in my opinion, because Ohio State's very clearly going to try to lean on its run game, which is a retooled run game because there's no Hugh Judkins and Travion Henderson. They're both in NFL backfields now, but they bring a lot back on their O-line, and they obviously have Jeremiah Smith, so probably a lot of short game throws to Smith and others to get Sain going. But I think the ability for Texas to impact saying early is key.
Yeah, I expect a low-scoring game, especially low-scoring first half, as both teams are probably going to try and protect their quarterbacks. I think I'd take Sain's supporting cast over Texas, over Arches. Not to say that Texas is lacking in any way, but Ohio State has the best player in college football and the best pass-catching tight end in college football. So, Texas picked its poison last time around, held Jeremiah Smith to one catch for 3 yards, and then kind of paid the price because everybody else kind of ate. Emeka Buka had a big game, as I recall. Carnell Tate had a big game. Carnell Tate's still there. Obviously, Abuka's gone. But Max Clair, I think they're going to pound into Satan's head that, hey, if JJ's not open, Max Clair's a great second option. So how does Texas defend that and force Satan into obvious passing downs? And then – I think Sark's probably going to be a little bit hesitant to put everything on Arch's shoulders, but at the same time, Arch is not going to go in there thinking of himself as a first-time starter. He's third year in the program. He's waited a long time for this. If Arch sees a play to be made, he's going to go make it. So I feel very little confidence about this pick, but going into this game, considering you've got a little bit more experience, more continuity on both sides of the ball with your coordinators, I'd rather be Texas than Ohio State. But that's like a 51-49 pick for me.
Zach took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, to me, it's a continuity game. Like, Texas has more continuity on their side in terms of returning both coordinators. And to me, you know, I said earlier this week, the verdict is out for me on the Ohio State coordinators and Matt Patricia and Brian Hartline. Now, Hartline calling the offense 2 years ago before Chip got there, and then Chip comes in and you hand him the reins. Did he undoubtedly learn some stuff from his time with Chip Kelly? Sure. Has that made him a better coordinator? Yeah, probably. But now you've got to cut your teeth. You're not cutting your teeth against an FCS cupcake. You're cutting your teeth against the number one team in the country, loaded with talent. So that's where it comes down to for me. You've got Arch that's got some snaps under his belt. Ohio State just has question marks all around Jeremiah Smith. And then on defense, you've got Caleb Downs returning, but you've got some major question marks there on the defensive line after losing some very productive players. So edge to me is relies in Texas, and all eyes are going to be on that one. I think there's a lot of pressure on Brian Hartline and Matt Patricia this week.
Doug, I'm curious for your perspective, because Brian Hartline's the OC, but Ryan Day has said he's spending more time with his offense this week because he's given – obviously that's his side of the ball, and he trusts Matt Patricia to oversee the defense. So given that Ryan Day's done the job much longer than Brian Hartline does, do you think Ryan Day gives Brian Hartline full autonomy to call plays on Saturday, or does he grab the joystick at certain points? Obviously, it's a little bit of a continuum here. But how do you see that playing out?
I think the simple fact that Ryan Day has said that he's going to be more involved in the offense tells you everything that you need to know in terms of his confidence in Brian Hartline's play calling this game. I think if they were playing, some FCS school, that Brian Hartline has all the controls and Ryan Day is kind of talking him through some things. I think the stakes of this game, even though it's week one and a lot can happen in the coming weeks, Ryan Day is saying he's going to be involved. Did he say that when he handed the reins to Chip Kelly? No, because there was full and complete trust in Chip Kelly's ability to call the game. I think Ryan Day definitely has input A in the game plan and will be on the headsets kind of guiding him through. And that's what any quality head coach would do with a coordinator breaking in a game like this. I don't think it's anything – it's nothing crazy. It's something high school coaches do with their JV staff every Wednesday or Thursday night when they play. So it's not something crazy. But, I think him saying he's going to be more involved in the offense tells us everything we need to know right there.
I think as we remember that this is these two teams, it's Texas's second straight game against Ohio State. Ohio State obviously beat Texas and then won a natty after that. But when I think about that Texas-Ohio State playoff game, semifinal contest, I sort of think of it as the Jack Sawyer game, because otherwise Texas was driving down mm-hmm. and in a very solid position for that game. So can this be the Anthony Hill game? I think Texas needs Anthony Hill to make a game-changing play in this contest to help neutralize home field advantage and to give the more experienced, slightly more talented team that extra bump to get the win on the road.
I think Sark has Arch so prepared. They're not going to modify. They're not going to hold their offense back. You know, first couple of drives, do a couple of dinks and dunks, get them started. Nah. Arch sees the field. He knows what coverage it is. He knows his seam routes, the route on this play. He's going for it. He's letting it rip. I think Texas takes shots because of the scheme that they're facing. I think Texas will be willing to take those shots because they like their man in the situation. I think you're going to see points scored. And I think it's going to be a great football game. And I think either team could win. I lean towards the home field a little bit, but that's just me. Great game. I think there's some other good football, but this is clearly the marquee in that 11 a.m. slot. I think all of America is watching this game, which would be awesome. All right. What other games throughout the rest of the day get you guys kind of excited?
LSU, Clemson, the Battle of Death Valleys, I think, is huge. It's crazy for me, and I didn't notice it until we researched that story on Scoop earlier this week. It's crazy to me that LSU hasn't won a season opener since the year it won the Natty. which means that LSU has not won its first game of the season this entire decade. Mm-hmm. So if they can't win in what is technically an upset for the experts, the odds makers, then they're six, they're a loser 6 years in a row on their opening game, which is just insane to me. LSU, a brand like LSU.
Flip it around, JB. If they win this game, how big of a statement is that for LSU's shot this season?
I'll tell you what I think it is, because I think Alabama's going to dog walk Florida State. And so I think if LSU wins this game, it's going to make the ACC really hard press to be anything more than at most a two-bid league. And it's going to send a message that, okay, Brian Kelly has been pretty confident all year long, from being in Destin at SEC spring meetings and telling Paul Feinbaum we're really good, to spending $1 million out of his pocket to help fortify this roster, to all of those things. Because LSU's schedule is so brutal beyond Clemson that this would give it a ton of equity moving forward in the season. Clemson needs it because there's not a lot of equity games, in my opinion, remaining on its schedule after that.
So – and looking at this game, where do you guys like LSU more than Clemson? Because I like Clemson more at quarterback, receiver, and D-line. But I'm curious for y'all's perspectives.
Personally, I like Garrett Nussmeier over Klubnik. I think when Garrett is playing his game, which is throwing the ball down the field, he's exceptional. Where LSU has struggled in the past, and this is my concern, is the offensive line. Last year, they had like the whole offensive line got drafted, and they weren't that good. Offensive line wise, this year they seem to have a lot of confidence in these guys, but these guys are pretty fresh. So that's my concern. LSU's defensive line has gotten better. I don't know whether or not I'd give them a leg up on Clemson's D line. I don't know the answer to that. LSU's receivers have speed this year. They didn't last year. I think I'd take LSU's receivers over Clemson's receivers. But yeah, Zach, that's just you and I seeing. You've watched Klubnik a lot. I've watched Nussmeier a lot. We each have confidence in our guy. I think Nussmeier outplays him this week.
Yeah, I think it's funny. Sorry, JB, but it's funny to me that Clemson has all this confidence based off of how they closed last season, and they closed last season of if that SMU's kickoff goes a little bit further. Clemson never returns it. That game goes overtime. SMU probably wins. Clemson never even makes the playoff. And then they go to the playoff game. They get absolutely gashed defensively on the ground by Texas. They did hit Cade Klubnik played out of his mind and gashed a really good Texas secondary. But a lot of those throws he made was when Clemson was trying to make a comeback in a game that they were never really seriously a threat to win the game. They lost it by 14 points. But add those two things together, and now Clemson's a national title contender. So I'm picking Clemson to win, but at the same time, I kind of recognize how silly this all is.
And to your point about how they closed last season, let's not forget they also lost late to South Carolina.
Yes.
In a game that fully put them on the precipice of being must-win in the ACC championship or not getting in. I will agree with you that Clemson, I think, has the top – 1 to 2 best wide receivers. I think collectively I would give the overall edge of that unit to LSU. I like LSU's linebackers better. I think the biggest question mark in the game is LSU's offensive line against a really good Clemson D line. But if LSU's offensive line is able to impede them, to stand them up, or just even force a stalemate in the trenches, then I like Garrett Nussmeier operating a little bit better and making better decisions than Klubnik.
I personally think that what decides this game is LSU's secondary. They were atrocious last year. If Blake Baker's scheme has been embraced, if they can use Perkins in the right way, if the defensive backs are just, 50-50, better would be nice. If they get back to playing LSU defense, they win this game. If it's still porous as can be,
I think the secondary suffers a little bit because the LSU pass rush has not been what it has been the past,
5, 10 years ago. You could name three of the four defensive linemen. Now I feel like that's not true. They're not healthy and you're rotating guys. So that takes a toll in the secondary when you can't get to the backfield.
In LSU's national championship type years, it wasn't that you could name three of the four defensive linemen. You could name 6 of the 8. Like, they just had dudes coming in on rotation. You're like, that guy's better than the starters. So they had depth, speed, and height, and length. And it hasn't really been present. We'll see. Hopefully it's there this year. All right. Other games. What else excites you?
I'm interested to watch Tennessee. Josh Heupel was America's favorite head coach back in April when he called Nico's bluff and let him walk. And I think we all respect him for that. But at the same time, in a perfect world, Nico's Tennessee's quarterback. And if given the option in a vacuum, Tennessee's choosing Nico over Joey Aguilar 100 times out of 100. So I hope Tennessee goes out and has a good season. But if Tennessee goes 6-6 this season, because their offense is struggling due to quarterback play, does Big Orange Nation, does college football as a whole view that situation differently and view everything different? You know, view that whole even remove, but the prospect of a player trying to strong arm his coach, do they view that differently moving forward? I don't have the answer, but it's just something I'm interested to see play out.
Yeah, I think that's a compelling game. Syracuse paid a very steep NIL price to get Notre Dame transfer quarterback Steve Angeli out of the portal. And then after they felt they had named a starter in the spring, he was a late addition. And then Angeli was named the starter probably 10 days ago or so for the Orange. He's not real mobile, but he can throw it to all three levels. So that will be interesting. And there's been a healthy dose of revisionist history spread around that Tennessee handling of the Nico Iamaleava saga, and that was for you, Doug. Thank you. I'm not good at poker. I can play a little blackjack, and so Nico had bluffed them into folding, sitting on 14 a whole bunch of times before they finally called his bluff and said, "Show us your cards." So it wasn't like they drew this hard line in the sand the first time he bucked up or the first time that they were at an impasse. So, but Aguilar will probably play a little more freely in Tennessee's system than did Nico. And their defense, I think, will be good enough to absorb some inevitable turnovers. Because if you threw 14 picks in the Sun Belt a year ago, you're probably going to throw some more picks in power conference ball over the course of this year as well. The other game for me, obviously, I'll be flying down there and covering it. Sunday is Notre Dame at Miami. Huge game. I did not realize the rivalry goes all the way back to the 1950s, but I think all of us here who appreciate college football know the Catholics versus convicts of 88 and beyond. And more recently, I can remember in 17, when it looked like Mark Richt was going to be the guy that really got Miami going, Miami just absolutely detonated the Irish in that stadium. And so Notre Dame had lost 6 games in a row in Miami until they managed that miraculous comeback against Penn State, but they still lost their last 6 games against Miami down there.
I think the hardest game for me to pick in our pick'ems this week was Kentucky, Toledo at Kentucky. Tough one for me to pick because I hear the Kentucky slander a few times a week here, and it might have polluted my brain a little bit, but this should not be a game that we even talk about. It's Mac against SEC, but Mark Stoops is no question on the hot seat after a 4-win season last year. Toledo is annually one of the top group of 5 programs in the country. Jason Candle does a great job. His coordinators are outstanding. He's got a great coaching staff. They've probably got one of the best budgets, and definitely from what I've heard from players that have played in the Mac, the Glass Bowl at Toledo is one of the, not that they're playing there, but it's one of the best places to play. So going down to Lexington for Toledo and Jason Candle, if they can somehow find a way to get a win against an SEC program, that's a huge feather in the cap for them, and it is time to press the panic button in Kentucky.
You can say it's influenced by slander, which I'm aghast at such a comment because I can't imagine where it would come from. Stunning to me, but this is a Kentucky team that somebody on this pod has already gone on record and said we'll beat Texas. and Vegas odds makers, I mean, again, you're just tuned into what's being discussed nationally, Doug, because Vegas set the line at 7.5, Kentucky minus 7.5. That's not us. That means that Vegas on a neutral site would have it even closer. And there's a lot of people out there calling their shot with Toledo. I'm not. Kentucky. That one, Kentucky's winning that game, and I think Kentucky covers.
I'm interested Saturday night in a traditional Big 12, Big 10 matchup of Utah at UCLA.
Yep.
Kyle Whittingham's back for his 35th season at Utah, but they've got fresh blood. It seems like that program was kind of held in purgatory for 2 years with Cam Rising, his injury situation. They've moved on, new coordinator, and Jason Beck from New Mexico, brought in Devin Dampier, his quarterback from New Mexico. So that should jumpstart things for one of the 8 or 9 teams that can go win the Big 12 with a UCLA with Deshaun Foster. He admitted this week that he was a little bit overwhelmed with being a head coach last season. We got a preview of that with his legendary opening statement at his first Big 10 media days. But he's in a different – he's at a different spot this year. He's not a rookie head coach anymore. He's returning. He's got a high-profile quarterback acquisition. I'm excited to see that game to close a marathon Saturday.
Yes, and real quickly on that game, glad you brought it up, because Kyle Whittingham, who absolutely isn't prone to hyperbole, said this week that and doubled down on the fact that he thinks this might be the best offensive line he's ever had at Utah, believes that their tackles are both high NFL draft picks, and that he was like, look, we have to go now show it out on the field. But yes, I believe this is the best offensive line we've had in my time at Utah. Utah's had some really good offensive lines, and it built itself under Whittingham on a very physical style of play. I think that's a massive difference in this game.
Jim Harding's a stud offensive line coach. Does a great job there. Okay, Sunday. We start with Virginia Tech, South Carolina. Anybody think Virginia Tech might sneak in there and get them?
I would go out on a limb and say Virginia Tech's got a shot. I really like Brent Pry. I love his journey as a defensive coordinator and what he did at Penn State, helped him land the job. He's breaking in two new coordinators with the Hokies and Sam Sefcus and Philip Montgomery. And let's not forget Philip Montgomery during his time at Baylor with Art Briles had one of the most electric offenses in college football history. They were outstanding. And then you pair that with Shane Beamer has not been impressive in opening games. They squeaked by Old Dominion last year and they're 3-3 start. Yeah. Should have lost.
Yep.
And then 2 years ago, they lost by 14 to Mack Brown in North Carolina. So they've been known under Shane Beamer to start slow out of the gate. And Brent Pry really needs a signature win on his resume. Whit Babcock is the athletic director pushing for more spending to get them up to the upper echelons or at least to the mid to top tier echelon of college football in the ACC. So they need a win to get a feather in the cap to help push that conversation forward.
Well, and that's a great point, Doug. And also, in addition to Carolina or South Carolina having should have lost last year to Old Dominion in that opener, and I think Kurt Cignetti, of course, is the one who brought this to my attention this week. Two of South Carolina's touchdowns came from 2 yards out and 6 yards out because of turnovers, and they still were darn lucky to escape that game. There's a lot of Lenora Seller hype going into this year. He has to play much more consistently, and he has to do so under a new offensive coordinator in Mike Shula, who hasn't called plays in college in quite a while. So I do think that that's another compelling subplot, that if Virginia Tech can affect Sellers early and Shula is coming back to the college game calling plays, I think that could give Virginia Tech a chance into the fourth quarter.
I think I'm Lenore Sellers' bandwagon. I think the dude's a stud. I think he is a legit player in college football. I think he's fun to watch.
High-level college defenders bounce off of him like bowling pins is a delight, and I can't wait
to watch that. Yes. Yeah, he's a difference maker. All right, Notre Dame, Miami. JB referenced the infamous 88 season. Last time Notre Dame won the national championship. It's It's been, what, 37, almost 40 years, first-time quarterback. Never thrown a pass. Fascinating. Interesting. Because of that game being, you know, brought back up, I saw the clip the other day. Lou Holtz must think this is his funniest line of all time, where he says he doesn't think it was fair, the moniker Catholics versus convicts, because not everybody on our team was Catholic. He just thinks that's – he giggles to himself knowing what he's about to say. He's so proud of himself. All right. Notre Dame, Miami. I love Notre Dame in the game. I know you guys don't all agree with me. What do you think?
I'm taking Miami. I think we forget this time last year, everyone had Carson Beck as the 1-1, and obviously that did not happen. But I think he's going to remind the country that he's a really good football player. And last year he was trying to do too much for a pedestrian offense around him at Georgia. And I'm not saying the overall talent at Miami he's going to have is better, but I think he'll score more points at Miami than he did last year at Georgia. And I think Hard Rock's going to be rocking, and I think the home team wins.
So I've had some similar thoughts, Zach, until I talked to two different people yesterday in Miami, and the game's not even a sellout yet. Just a different vibe on South Beach as it pertains to college football, especially on a holiday weekend. The two best players on the field at any given time are going to be Miami offensive tackle Francis Mananoa and Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love. Francis doesn't touch the ball. Jeremiah Love does. He's the difference in a Notre Dame win.
Agreed. Good stuff. All right, Monday night. We got Monday Night Football, college style. TCU goes up against the Fighting Bill Belichicks. I'm going with college coaching consistency. I'm picking TCU in the game, but I would love to see a great game from Belichick's squad.
I think
TCU, they felt like – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Doug.
No. You go ahead. Go ahead, ZB.
Well, the feeling around TCU is that if they can run the ball this year, they're going to be a really good team. And Kendall Briles has said that he feels like his running back group is the most improved unit they've had since the spring. They bring back Josh Hoover for his second year as a starting quarterback. I think TCU, they're over under 6.5. I think they're closer to 9 than 6 this season. I'm confident in two things. TCU is going to win the game, and I'm absolutely going to zonk out on the couch in the second quarter of this game.
Or will you be ordering Gold Digger jewelry online?
I will not be doing that.
Great stuff, gentlemen. Great stuff. College football is back. I couldn't be more excited. I hope your fridges are well stocked. If not, you still have time to run Costco. That's about all I can tell you guys. Govern yourselves accordingly. Let's enjoy a great weekend of college football. We're out.